In the last section, I asked, on a scale of 0 to 100%, how many of the animals that come into general practice today are predominantly healthy, they need wellness and preventative health care, and they have common maladies like skin problems, ear infections, eye problems, lameness. I mean, everyone in the hospital truly could learn how we diagnose those problems based on the symptoms and can educate clients at least some information about all of those things. But we don't take the time to educate our team to be able to communicate conversational veterinary medicine with our clients. But if we empower our team and they have the knowledge, we take the knowledge out of the veterinarian's brain and we put it and disseminate it in everyone else's brains on the team, now we're all able to serve our clients in the highest form. And now the healthcare team starts to develop relationships with clients, and now they're satisfied in their job and they're motivated to do it all over again. So staff empowerment has to happen, but training and development must be in place in order for the doctor to trust that the employees are going to say it as good as they say it. Right? And I did this presentation a while back, and I had an associate veterinarian that stood up and said, I can see where this is going right now. You want those people talking to my clients, and it's not going to happen. Can you imagine? The employees were sitting there and they heard this. And they were pretty upset. We took a break and two of the employees came back and one of them stood standing and I said, is there something you'd like to say? And she said, yes. And she looked at that doctor and she said, I've worked for you for the last 10 years and I'm a registered veterinary technician. And I love you. And everybody else cares about you. And we know that you get up in the morning before your baby gets up so that you can get to the practice on time, and you're here till wee hours in the night, and you get home after your baby's gone to bed. And I've stood beside you for the last 10 years in the exam room, and I could almost repeat verbatim what you say to our clients. But every time I go to open my mouth, you give me that look, and so I don't say anything. And Nancy over here, she's a registered dental technician, and she's smart too. And we want to help you if you would just let us help you. But I think many times veterinarians, I'm a daughter of a veterinarian, and I saw this in my father's practice when I came on board with him. And I think it's not this issue of control. I think control is part of it, you know, just being controlling. But I think part of it is, you know, where our profession comes from. It comes from utilitarian medicine, where it was predominantly focused on injury, illness, and disease. And so it needed the intimate contact time of a veterinarian. Whereas today, 85 to 90% of the patients that are coming into practice today are healthy and are needing a lot of information about so they can make the right decision for their pet so that they can have happy, healthy, long lifespan. And so the team has to be involved in that. But it requires that we do the training that needs to be done. That associate did end up transforming, and he did empower his team, and they do exceptionally well now. But this is what I see often in practices that I go into. This was my father's practice when I went into his practice. It was veterinarian centered, and everything focused around him. All the client relationships were with the veterinarian, the pet care, all the client education, the practice management, the staff management, and the diagnostic and treatment procedures. And my dad was ready to leave the profession. He was so burned out. He didn't love what he did anymore. He was tired. And here are the roles and responsibilities that I see often in this doctor-centered environment. You've got receptionists who answer phones, but they take message, they transfer calls because they're not empowered to answer any medical questions. They quote prices for shop services, but they don't know how to create value. They don't know how to educate the client about those services. They don't know how to offer additional services, and they know how to close the deal and get them in the door because they haven't been trained. They just get thrown up at the front desk, and, you know, they're just surviving on their own. We just kind of throw them to the wolves and expect them to promote our services. And then technicians and assistants in doctor-centered practices, they may go into a room, but they're predominantly just a glorified animal restrainer. They're checking the weights, temps, and they're just assisting the veterinarian and doing whatever the veterinarian wants them to do and not really being proactive and involved in the cases. And boarding, grooming, and kennel, we're really underutilizing these folks. They're doing a lot of janitorial work and animal care. And, you know, it's interesting. Boarding and grooming employees are dealing with our A clients' pets. Because A clients are the ones who board and groom their pets. They're spending more money in our practices to do some of the extra things, but yet we hire the lowest caliber of people and we don't even spend any time training them, and they're going up to the front and that client is having interface with that employee and we haven't given them any knowledge or any training whatsoever regarding what we provide in our hospital. I don't get it. And then veterinarians in doctor center practices are doing everything. Everything. And the veterinarian becomes the rate limiting step to practice growth. And now communication is inconsistent. How many of you work in a practice where you have more than one veterinarian on staff? Pretty much everybody. So how is it in your practice when your client asks one of your employees about vaccine protocol? Or heartworm preventative, or flea and tick preventative, or how a surgery might be performed? Does the employee go, well, it kind of depends on which doctor you see. If you see Dr. Smith, it may be this, and I can't really tell you until any of you guys have that problem where the healthcare team doesn't really know what to say. There's inconsistency in the communication. If that's the case, then you have a doctor-centered practice. And then you've got pet care is inconsistent. You may have one doctor who's extremely thorough and does diagnostics on everything, and then you may have one doctor who's treating things symptomatically, and now there's inconsistency and profits are lower, and it's harder to achieve good client service in these practices. Many of the healthcare team members in doctor-centered practices, they see their position as a job because they're being underutilized. They're just being, you know, they're a manual worker who is just doing whatever they're told to do, and they're not able to use their brain. They're just being, you go do this, you go do that, now go do this, and people aren't going to thrive in that environment. And what I talk about often with the practices that I consult is we need to have this new model of a client-patient-centered practice. We put the client in the center. Because when people feel like they're being part of something bigger than themselves, and they're serving society, and they're serving community, and they're serving the client, they're going to be a lot more motivated to do their job. And when they're starting to develop relationships with clients, and we're sharing our knowledge with each other, and we're setting standards in our practice to serve our clients and patients in its highest form, you're going to have a highly motivated team member. Because they've been empowered to, you know, my job in this practice, it doesn't matter if I'm a kennel assistant or I'm a client care specialist or I'm a veterinary assistant or I'm a licensed veterinary technician, my job is to serve clients and patients in its highest form. And I'm to expand my knowledge to whatever capacity I can so I can serve clients and patients. You're going to have a much motivated employee when that takes place. Now, here are the roles and responsibilities in a client-patient-centered practice. And you know what? I have this word receptionist, but I think that is an old term. If you are calling your front office team receptionist, you need to stop calling them receptionist. Because it's just, titles mean a lot to people. They really do. You want to elevate your team? Change their titles to mean something really important. Like a receptionist, I don't even think that depicts really what they do. I believe in, you know, titling it client care specialist. Or client service representative, because they are very client focused. And if you're going to be a client patient center practice, you might want to take a look at your titles and what you're calling your people, elevate them to a level where they feel professional and they will start acting professional. The client care specialist, they're offering healthy pet information. They're scheduling appointments. They're creating estimates and treatment plans based on the standards that you've set in your hospital. They're bonding with clients and patients. And when they answer the phone, they're educating clients about your services. They're offering additional services. They're educating them. They're bonding with them. They're meeting their needs. They're able to answer medical questions because they've been educated about that 85 to 90%. Technicians and assistants, they're walking into the exam room and they're doing 80% of that client transaction. And the veterinarian is doing 20%. So they're getting a thorough medical history. They're making recommendations based on the standards that you've set in your hospital. And the veterinarian is doing the physical exam and making recommendations based on the standards, but the technicians and assistants have already anticipated what that looks like. They're going into the room and presenting the treatment plan and getting client approval, explaining medications, updating the medical record. In surgery and treatment roles, they're doing everything that does not require a veterinary license. Boarding, grooming, kennel, same thing. They're offering healthy pet information. So if you've got a kennel assistant who's proactive and has the knowledge and they've got an animal that's boarding, they can open the medical record and say, oh, boy, I noticed that dog had a lot of tartar in his teeth. He hasn't had a dental in 2 years. I'm going to put together a dental estimate and call the client and let them know that we can get that dentistry done while the animal's here boarding. And they can feel empowered to do that. And then they can go over it with the client when they pick it up. And veterinarians in client-patient-centered practices, they're doing what they were trained to do. Examine, consult, diagnose, make therapeutic recommendations, interpret diagnosis, special procedures, and surgery. So in client-patient-centered practices, veterinarians do what they were licensed to do, and the healthcare team is empowered to develop relationships with clients. And now, when you have that, now you're able to see more clients. Animals are receiving a higher level of quality of care because it's difficult for the veterinarian to do it all by themselves. They can't. There's too much that has to be done in that one client transaction. We have to train the healthcare team. It has to become a systems-dependent organization versus a veterinary-dependent organization. And when you have a systems-dependent practice, where you have a system for everything you do in your hospital, it can be operated by people with low skill level. They don't have to be necessarily college-degreed, MBA, professional folks. Let me just give you an example of what I'm talking about. How many of you have heard of the Ritz-Carlton Hotel? Okay, some of you have heard of it. They're a 5-star hotel, and they are known for their exceptional client service. And I want to share an experience with you that I had at the Ritz-Carlton. My husband took me there for my birthday about 6 years ago. And we pull up at the valet, and the valet person comes around to my husband's side. He opens the door and speaks to my husband for a few moments. Then he comes around on my side. He opens my door for me, and he says, "Good evening, Miss Dowdy, and happy birthday." And I said, "Good evening." He helps me out of the car. He helps us with our bags. He hands us his business card, and he said, "My name is George. Here's my extension. If you need anything, do not hesitate to call me. If you want your card because you need to go out, call me 10 minutes ahead of time, and I'll have it sitting out here waiting for you. I hope you have a wonderful stay at the Ritz-Carlton." We said, "Thank you." We walk in, and as we're walking up to the counter to check in, the woman behind the desk is standing up. She looks at us with eye contact, and she says, "Good evening. Welcome to the Ritz-Carlton." And we said, "Good evening." And we said, "We're the Dowdies, and we're checking in." And so she starts typing in her computer, and then she stops and looks at me with eye contact, and she says, "Happy birthday, Miss Dowdy." And I said, "Thank you." So she gives us our keys, and as we're going up the escalator, there's a hotel employee dressed in a tuxedo, very professional. He looks at us with eye contact and a smile, and he says, "Good evening. Welcome to the Ritz-Carlton." And we said, "Good evening." And so we go into our room, and all the lamps are lit, and the music, there's music playing in our room, and there's a bouquet of red roses and a plate of chocolate-covered strawberries, and in chocolate syrup it says, "Happy birthday." And there's a little card from the maid, and she's given us her extension and said, "You know, if we need anything, do not hesitate to contact us." And our blanket is pulled back, and there's a chocolate sitting on the pillow, and Bailey's Irish Cream on the bedside table, and I'm just starting to feel really special here, okay? It's like, wow. And then we go down to the restaurant, and as we're walking up, The gentleman standing at the hostess desk says, "Are you the Dowdies?" We said, "Yes." And they said, "We've been expecting you. Follow me." And they take us to our table, and they pull out my chair for me, and they sit me down, and there's a card on my place setting with my name on it. And I open it up, and everyone, all the wait staff, have signed it wishing me a happy birthday. And throughout the entire evening, they continue to use my name. "Miss Dowdy, can I get you some more wine? Miss Dowdy, are you finished with that? May I get you this? Would you like this?" And I mean, we had like four people serving us. We had a water waiter. We had a wine waiter. We had an entree waiter. And it was just amazing. I mean, absolutely amazing. And so, you know, it's expensive to stay at a place like this. But you know what? You're not going to get five-star client service in Motel 6 prices. You're going to pay for it. But you know what? It's worth every single penny because you can't wait to go back there and have another exceptional experience. So my question to you is, where do they find the people that work at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel? Where do they find those people? They train them, absolutely. They're ordinary people that are able to do extraordinary things through standards. They have standards of service, standards of communication, standards of conduct, standards of image. Some of their standards of service, they have three steps of service. Step number one, we greet every hotel guest with eye contact and a smile. Step number two, we are here to meet their needs. Step number three, we bid them a fond farewell to complement the overall experience of their stay. Their standards of conduct, we are, ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen. That means that every time a hotel guest walks into their hotel, they treat those hotel guests as well as they treat each other internally. They teach them how to have good eye contact and body language. They teach them standards of communication, how to use words of elegance like certainly, my pleasure, good morning, good evening. And they teach them to take words out of their vocabulary that are unprofessional. And when you start standardizing the way you do things in your hospital, such as the Ritz-Carlton or Disney or some of these other corporations, you're going to be able to empower your healthcare team to talk to your clients. But it requires creating a standard. And you have to spend time working on your practice versus in your practice. You know, the very first slide I showed, training can be a daunting task. When do you do it? How do you do it? How do you empower? Well, I'm a firm believer that you have to spend time working on your practice versus in your practice. Now, one of the things I recommend in the practices that I consult are weekly meetings, where you actually close down your practice for a few hours every week and spend time working on your practice versus in your practice. And if you want to have a vision of being a client-patient-centered practice and you want to empower your healthcare team, that just isn't going to happen by osmosis. You've got to dedicate the time to do it. And probably about 6 years ago, I called my dad up, who's a veterinarian, and he's been practicing for over 30 years. And I said, "Dad, you need to start having weekly meetings with your healthcare team, client service meetings. And close down your practice and spend about 3 hours training them." There was just dead silence on the other end of the phone. I said, "Tracy, there is no way I'm going to do that. We are too busy. We don't have time. There's just no way we can do it." And I said, "Okay, Dad, let me ask you a question. How many hours a week is your practice open?" But he added up. He said, "Well, about 65, 68 hours a week." And I said, "So what you're telling me is that you can't dedicate 3 hours out of that 65 working on your practice versus in your practice with your entire healthcare team?" He said, "Well, I see your point, but what are we going to talk about for 3 hours every single week? What could we possibly talk about?" And I said, "Trust me, I will create an agenda for you that your team will get excited about coming to these meetings because they'll be inspired, they'll be motivated, knowledge will be shared, information will be shared, the communication lines will be open, you'll have an opportunity to recognize them and praise them for the work they do, And I said, your income will go up. I said, you won't lose money by closing down 3 hours a week. I said, you'll grow in income. I said, because think about all the things that go on in your practice on a weekly basis that never get resolved. And then when you have that monthly meeting, you think, okay, what was that I was going to bring up at that monthly meeting? Oh, gosh, it's really not that important anymore. I'm not even going to talk about it. So you have to dedicate that time to make your vision become reality. And we just don't take the time to do that. But it does. It creates a forum to keep the vision at the forefront of everyone's mind. And it holds everyone accountable to the standards and core values that you've set in your hospital. I'm going to talk a little bit about those weekly meetings later in the day. So the top priority in staff training, guys, I believe, is setting standards. Do you have written standards in your hospital that everyone is trained to from the moment they start on their first day? Do you have a standards handbook in writing? If you don't, I would highly recommend that you start developing some standards in your practice, similar to the Ritz-Carlton. So let's talk about these. Let me give you some examples of what these standards might look like in your practice. Let me go back. Okay, I'll go back for a moment. These are in my preceding notes, by the way. If you guys miss out on some of these notes, these are all enclosed in the proceedings that you got with your packet. It's either on CD-ROM or in the big book. So you got standards of care, standards of image, standards of communication, standards of service, and standards of conduct. Which, by the way, and I'm going to go through some of this, AHA came out with client service standards in 2003, and they recommend that you have written standards in your practice. So let's look at standards of care. These are standards that are determined by the veterinarians, and they represent the level of care a pet receives in your practice. They're set high, and then your team is trained to why they're essential in the delivery of health care. So here are all the standards of care that you could standardize in your practice. You've got wellness standards, diagnostic standards, therapeutic standards, hospitalization standards, anesthetic standards, surgical standards, and treatment standards. I'm going to give you examples in all these categories. So here are all the things that you could standardize in wellness: exams, vaccinations, preventions, diagnostics, dental care, grooming and behavior, and nutrition. Let's look at physical exam. Does everyone in your practice know the importance of a physical exam? What's the common fee? I was in a seminar last week. I was in Houston, Texas. And someone had a physical fee as low as $27.50. They were all from Houston. Okay? Or within that region of Texas, as low as $27.50 and as high as $55. What's going on with that? Why is it that we've got such a range? And my question to that audience was, how much does it cost to have an electrician come to your house? And someone said, oh, $95. And I asked them, and how much schooling does it require to become an electrician? So we still have this utilitarian backdrop in our profession where we're just not charging appropriately for our physical exams. And I think part of it is because we don't teach our team to educate clients about the importance of a physical exam. A physical exam has to be done by a veterinarian. That's what they went to school and were trained to do, but yet we don't take the time to educate our team members to talk to clients about physical exams and the importance of those. But you have to create value in them. So you standardize them. How often do you do them? Do you verbalize the 12 body systems when you're actually doing the exam and educate the client? Do you send home a report card with the normal and abnormal findings? Do you start doing some of those things and set a standard with all of your doctors and your healthcare team? You can, you know, charge in that higher range for your physical exams because there's value in it. Preventatives. What type of heartworm preventative do you recommend in your practice? Do you carry all of the products and you leave it up to the client to decide, or do you make a recommendation? And is it standard across the board with your healthcare team? I think it should be. Do you do strategic deworming? The Center for Disease Control recommends that all dogs and cats have strategic deworming. because it's a human health risk. Do you have that as a standard in your practice? Does your team know that and why? Routine diagnostics for wellness patients. Do you recommend heartworm testing annually, every other year? I know some states don't have heartworms, but what about fecal testing? Do you do healthy pet profiles? Is that a standard in your practice? Nutrition. I was in a practice and they were carrying every diet known to man. And that cost the practice overhead. And you lose money. The longer those products sit on your shelf, you lose money. So why not, let's streamline what products we offer in our hospital. Let's bring in those reps. Let's hear about their product. And then as a team, let's decide what's going to be our standard recommendation for nutrition or for preventatives or for therapeutic medications. And let's streamline it so there's not a lot of question in people's mind in your hospital of what we recommend to our clients. And we have a tremendous amount of knowledge about each standard in our practice. And creating client communication tools is a great tool because you can give it to the client and you start educating the client, but you also educate the staff when you have those written tools in place, handouts that you can give to the client. Okay, so that's wellness standards. Let's talk about diagnostic standards. Do you have a standard in your practice that states, we diagnose before we treat? Just a simple statement. And have you told everyone on your team, that's what we do, that's our standard? So when Mrs. Jones calls in at your practice and says, well, can't you just give me some cream for those ears? Do I really have to come in and see the doctor? Your client care specialist can say, well, Mrs. Jones, we have a standard here. And our standard is we like to diagnose the problem before we treat it. Because we want to make sure that we know what type of cream to put in Muffy's ears. And we're not going to know that until we look in those ears and we do the necessary tests so we can identify what's causing that problem. But we'd like to diagnose before we treat. How many tests do you think there are in a veterinary practice with blood work, blood, checking blood, being counted as one test? Do you think there's over 50 or 100 or under 20? How many think it's under 20? Raise their hand. How many think it's over 50? Raise their hand. And the rest of you are non-committal, right? It's actually under 20. There's under 20 tests in a veterinary practice. You guys want to count them? Or do you believe me? Let's count them. Just for fun. Just for kicks. So you got cytology, culture and sensitivity, ear mite exam. You've got blood work, skin scraping and analysis, fungal culture, wood lamp exam, allergy testing, which is actually blood work, isn't it? That's 9. You've got corneal staining, that's 10. Tonometry is 11. Shimmer tear test is 12. What else? You've got x-ray, fecal, urinalysis, that's 15. Ultrasound is 16. Blood pressure is 17. EKG is 18. MRI is 19. Someone else said something else? What? Biopsy is 20. There might be a couple others we may not have listed. But the bottom line is, why can't everyone in your practice know what tests we do and when we do them based on the symptoms of the patient? So when a client calls in and says, yes, my dog has been vomiting and has had diarrhea for the last several days. What is all this going to cost me? What's going on with my pet? You have to train your healthcare team. We're not diagnosing animals over the phone. But your client care specialist can say, well, I'm not sure, Mrs. Jones, what's going on with Buffy. But based on what you're telling me, I would assume, based on our standards in our hospital, that the doctors will want to do just some baseline tests. I know we'll need to do a physical exam. We'll need to do a fecal. We may need to do a parvo test. And that's just, and I can give you a cost associated with those things, but once we identify, once we do those tests, then there's going to be some additional expense after that. So, once you start to do that and you start to train your healthcare team, they're able to solve people's problems. Because that's really what we're in the business of doing, is solving people's problems. They come into our hospital because they have a problem with their pet, but we don't empower our healthcare team to solve their problems. It's always, well, I don't know what to tell you until the doctor sees your animal. So we want to be able to educate them as much as we can. Therapeutic standards, medications, injections, conversion charts, dosage rates, charts for fluid flow rates, catheter maintenance. We just want to streamline the efficiency. I was in a practice in Sonoma, California, consulting a four-doctor practice, and their inventory cost was 27% of their gross income. Now, those of you who know what the benchmark should be, it should be between 18 and 20%. So they were 9 to 7% over in inventory expense. And so I started opening up the cabinets in their pharmacy and throughout their hospital, and they had everything. I mean, everything known to man. Every antibiotic that solved the same problem, every anti-inflammatory. They had like 7 different ear flushes and vitamins and food, and it was just ridiculous. And that, you know, they're losing money by doing that. So let's streamline the efficiency. You know, when we have dentistry, what antibiotic are we going to predominantly send that animal home on? So there's not a lot of question in the technician's mind or the veterinary assistant that's helping that doctor with the procedure. They know, they can just say to the doctor, you want to send home Clavamox? We're going to send home Clavamox because that's like the standard. We're going to send home Clavamox for this. And the doctor can say, yes. Simple and easy, and they go and get it ready. Animal Bill of Rights. The other part of having standards in place, it not only streamlines the efficiency in your practice, and your team, your healthcare team is able to talk to clients, but you're able to boast about the things that makes your hospital exceptional. Hospitalization standards. Yes, Mrs. Jones, I realize our hospitalization fee is $85 per night, but let me explain to you our standards, our hospitalization standards in our hospital. When Buffy comes into our hospital, we monitor them every hour and update their medical record. We have a ward attendant that is specially assigned to Buffy when she's here. And our doctor is monitoring them as well. And we keep them on a rack so that they stay clean and dry, and we give them a heating pad. And you start explaining to them about your hospital, the difference. And it doesn't matter what position you're in. Everyone in the hospital knows these are our standards. Anesthetic standards. Yes, Mrs. Jones, I realize that our spay procedure may be a little bit more than some of the other practices, but let me make sure you're comparing apples to apples if you're going to shop around. Because our fee includes pre-anesthetic blood work, pain medication, follow-up aftercare. We use the safest anesthesia available for your pet. We use the latest technology in our equipment. We monitor your pet throughout the entire procedure. Your dog is getting fluid therapy throughout the procedure. And all of a sudden the client goes, oh, well, they didn't say any of that when I called the other place. And now all of a sudden you've differentiated yourself, and your team now knows what our standards are in our hospital. So it becomes an efficiency in the workflow, but also when you're talking to clients, they can educate. He who has an educated client wins. The more we can educate our staff, the more our clients will be educated, the more they will comply with our recommendations. Surgical standards. Mrs. Jones, we use sterile technique. Surgical wound appearance, just some very basic things that we don't realize that if we standardize them, there wouldn't be a lot of upset clients that come into our hospital. I had a doctor say it like this regarding treatment standards. Let's keep it simple. If you have 12 body systems, if you had 10 medical protocols preloaded in your computer system, you'd pretty much have just about everything you would see in a general practice on a routine basis. And so think about how much you could streamline your efficiency if everyone on your team could go into your computer system and pull up a treatment protocol. Your reception team, your client care specialist, they can pull it up and be able to say, well, you know, based on our standards, this is typically how we would, this would be the protocol for parvo treatment. Or when the veterinary assistant or technicians in the exam room and they're listening to the doctor explain what needs to be done, they can anticipate their need and go to the computer and print out that treatment plan and say, do you want me to go in and present this to the client and get a deposit? Yes. So instead of them saying, okay, doctor, what do you want me to do next? It's already in the computer system, and now there's real efficiency in your workflow. You're not having to wait for the doctor to take the knowledge out of their brain and disseminate it to the healthcare team. Now it's already in the system. And I think sometimes veterinarians get real tense about telling other doctors in their practice how to practice medicine. That's not what this is about. You know, every veterinarian has their own way of doing things, but I think it's about the client and the patient. And if our vision is to serve our clients and patients in their highest form, then we need to standardize some things and think about we've got to be able to empower the healthcare team. And you can't do that if everything that's going on up in this veterinarian's brain is unique and different from what everybody else is doing. That's not what's in the best interest of the client and the patient. Can you deviate from the treatment plan? Absolutely. And the veterinarian has the latitude to be able to do that. What about standards of image? So we've got the standards of care implemented. What about standards of image? AHA came out with client service standards, and they said personal appearance has an influence on the development of trust and effective communication between individuals. By following a written protocol in regard to appearance, the practice is better able to foster trust and communication between the team members and the clients they serve. Now, in my dad's practice, they wear blue button-down collared shirts with brown belt, brown shoes, and khaki pants. And there's research that backs up this uniform policy. Blue and white are the most trusting colors. So when people wear blue or wear white, clients are going to be more compliant with their recommendations. Clients wearing collars and cuffs are going to be more compliant with your recommendations. And so what they're saying that this does with the healthcare team, everybody wears this, everybody. The doctors wear this, the client care specialists, the veterinary assistants, the technicians. It creates an equal playing field for everyone on the team. There's no visual hierarchy in this practice, so it empowers everyone on the team. So from the client's view, they look out and they see the team and everyone looks equal. We all have the knowledge and we're all able to give it to you, Mrs. Client. And so that's what it does for the healthcare team, and it creates consistency. And why do you think McDonald's is so successful? It's not because they make exceptional hamburgers and french fries. It's because you can go to Seattle, New York, London, or Orlando, and you can walk into those golden arches, and you can order that quarter pounder with cheese, and that chocolate shake, and it's going to taste the same, it's going to cost the same, everyone's going to look the same. And I'm not suggesting that you be a McDonald's veterinary practice. But my point is that there's something successful about that. You have to go to Hamburger University for 2 years if you want to own a McDonald's franchise and learn all of their systems and standards. People like consistency. And so when they walk into your practice and they see everyone dressed in a uniform appearance, that improves their client service experience. Standards of conduct. Again, AHA recommends that you have written standards about how people are supposed to conduct themselves in your practice. Now, those of you who have been listening to me all morning can tell I'm from the South. I'm from Dallas. And I grew up with a mother who read Emily Post cover to cover. And so I learned about social etiquette and how to behave in public at a very, very early age. But one of the things I've learned about managing people is that not everyone's raised like me. And so some people just don't know how to behave in social and public settings or in business settings. And so we have to teach them. We have to tell them what's okay to do and what's not okay to do. And if you don't put that in writing, I mean, sky's the limit. They can do, they'll do just about anything they want until you tell them, no, don't do that. So AHA recommends you have a written protocol to ensure that the practice accepts responsibility for and demonstrates a uniform and high level professional conduct, ethics, and behavior. Standards of service. Huge. People, I just automatically assumed when I started managing people that everyone knew what good client service looked like. But they don't. People don't understand how important eye contact is and body language and, you know, anticipating the client's needs and using words of courtesy. We have to train them to those things, and we have to set standards and hold them accountable to that. Why not adopt Ritz-Carlton's three steps of service in our hospitals? Step number one, we greet every client with eye contact and a smile. We use their name as much as possible. We're here to meet their needs. We thank them every time they leave our hospital. Teaching them the different elements of courtesy and politeness. Standards of communication. Teaching them how to communicate in a way that eludes professionalism. How we communicate on the telephone, email, medical records, our clients, and with each other. Standardizing all of those things. Does everyone in your hospital know how to answer the telephone? And when they do answer it, do they answer it exactly the same? Do they know how to put a client on hold? Do they know how to transfer a call? Do they know how to take a message accurately? Does everyone in your hospital know how to write in a medical record and use, for example, AHA standard abbreviations? So when you pick up a medical record, it doesn't matter what position you're in the hospital, or maybe you're paperless, but you can read it like a narrative, and you know exactly what that doctor was thinking about that case. And so the client care specialist can say, well, Mrs. Jones, it looks like here that Dr. Smith talked to you about this and you declined that, and so these were the next steps that we took. And then the client, you know, they're able to solve that problem right there and not have to, you know, say, well, you're going to have to wait and talk to Dr. Jones about that. So standards, guys, it's essential. If you want to train your healthcare team, you've got to be able to set the standards first so that you can train them. And then spend time working on your practice weekly with your healthcare team. Develop your written standards. You know, have a standards handbook with your healthcare team. And it starts with the very first day of employment, and then you continue to if you don't have written standards in place, then you start, you commit by having a vision of becoming a client-patient-centered practice. You get your team on board with that vision, and then you start developing standards, and then every week you start rolling out those standards with your healthcare team. It's not going to happen overnight. It's baby steps. Having a transformation in your practice is baby steps, and over the next 12 to 24 months, you will have developed and built that car. And now we are smooth sailing every day because everybody knows this is the guide to how we do it in our hospital. So when new employees come in, they're trained to the standards. And then you continue to regroup every week and recap on what our standards are. If you see people are not following through with the standards, your weekly meetings is a forum to be able to bring that back and say, guys, we're not doing what is part of our standards. And you redevelop your team to know that this is the way we do it in our hospital. Thank you guys so much. Questions?